Some of you who are attending the Sunday program may have been aware or may have not been aware. During this Thanksgiving holiday, we've been gathering for maybe 6 hours a day to discuss one little skinny book that's very heavy. These, in terms of transcendental knowledge within it, Sri Brahma Samhita. Sri Brahma Samhita is a 62-verse text that is something like an index to the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, that the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam are presented within it in a very sutra-like or capsule form. So this is session number 13, each of the other ones being around 2 hours each. So do the math, 24 hours worth of discussion. And we're going to have just 45 minutes worth this evening for closure. These charts that you see posted up here, that's been part of what we've been referring to, because part of Sri Brahma Samhita is describing, well, the topic is Krishna. And so part of the discussion is the abode of Krishna, and the abode of Krishna in a yantra form or mystic diagram form is at the top there, and a larger enlargement is on the right side. And then going down Ayodhya Dham, going down Vaikuntha Dham, going down the causal ocean, where Mahavishnu is residing and reclining on the Ananta Shesh carrier, and Mahavishnu's function of bringing the created realm, Devi Dham, into existence, we discussed in detail. And then from the universes, you see those golden colored orbs that are coming from the body of Mahavishnu, each of them being universes. When they contact the material energy, the Mahatattva, layers form around those universes. Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters within each of those universes. And Lord Brahma appears on the stem or on the lotus flower that appears from his navel. The lotus flower representing, of all things, the sum total karma of all living entities. That's a lot of karma. It's a big lotus. And at least all the living entities within our particular universe or any universe. And we also then discuss the enlightenment of Lord Brahma, the process that he followed to become a perfectly realized soul, not only understand Aham Brahmasmi, but to understand his eternal relationship with Krishna, down to the particular rasa or eternal mood of love that he has in his spiritual form with Krishna. We discussed all those things. It was wonderful time spent together. After he achieves this mature stage of realization, he then offers beautiful prayers. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami, that I'm going to be discussing next Thanksgiving holiday. Stay tuned for coming attractions. And after completing those wonderful prayers, Krishna speaks to him and says, I know that you have a very strong desire to create, not just create a software program, or some, you know, a gizmo or a gadget to try to market it. But he wanted to create a universe. And in five verses, the last five verses of Sri Brahma Samhita, Krishna gives a very succinct formula or method for progressing spiritually while one is still involved in affairs of this world. And I can say from my years of traveling as a sannyasi, it's on the top five of the hit parade of questions that people ask. How do I balance, you know, it's asked in different ways. How do I balance spiritual and material duties? You know that question. It's asked in different ways. Here's the way that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the commentator, speaks about it. And this is from, we read this earlier, it's the purport of text 26. True devotion is unalloyed devotion activity, devotional activity, free from all mundane desire. Anybody want to volunteer and say they have no material desire? It's only one, just pure unalloyed devotion to the personality of Godhead. No one's going to raise their hand. So it appertains to us. The devotion of Brahma, etc., is not unmixed devotion. But there is a stage of unmixed predilection, or tendency, or inclination. Even in devotion for the attainment of one's selfish desire. This has been fully described in the concluding five slokas of this work. That is the easiest method of divine service prior to the attainment of self-realization by fallen souls. And that means us, the fallen souls. So, this morning, we discussed what Krishna said, that the first three of five verses that Krishna spoke. And the first of them, Krishna spoke about what unmixed devotion is. And then he described that there's a process of practice where one has an aspiration to come to that topmost stage of unmixed devotion. And it's very nice advice for all of us. Krishna indicates, the highest devotion is attained by slow degrees, by the method of constant endeavor for self-realization, with the help of scriptural evidence, word is pramana, theistic conduct, or sadachar, and perseverance in practice, abhyasa, constantly practicing according to the codes of theistic conduct, sadachar, guided by scriptural evidence, and making a constant endeavor towards a goal, or the goal of complete spiritual emancipation and connecting with the Supreme Person. These four things. Slow degrees of constant practice, constant endeavor in that way, and gradually that highest stage of devotion is attained. And then he indicates there's practices or sadhana that one is recommended to do, that is conducive to achieve that stage of loving devotion. And then that leads us up to where we are right now, the final two verses. We can chant together. It's on the screen up here. Text 61. Dharman anyan parityaja mamekam bhajavishvasam yadrushi yadrushi shraddha siddhir bhavati tadrushi gurvandirantaram karma lokoyam anuvartate tenaiva karmana dhyayam mam param bhaktin icchati. The translation. Abandoning all meritorious performances, serve me with faith. The realization will correspond to the nature of one's faith. The people of the world act ceaselessly in pursuance of some ideal. By meditating on me, by means of those deeds, one will obtain devotion characterized by love, in the shape of the Supreme Service. Very nice. So, those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, this verse rings in the beginning, just like the Bhagavad Gita verse. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yasyami ma suchaha. For our children in the Sunday school, that's for sure one of the verses that they learn. Do you know that verse? Any one of you boys in the front? Okay. You'll learn it, I'm sure, in the course of your Sunday school classes. Very important verse. So, meritorious, Bhaktisiddhanta's language, meritorious performances. So, processes for spiritual elevation that do not directly involve submitting oneself, sharanam, surrender to the personality of Godhead, they should take a secondary position to this primary function of surrender to the Supreme Lord. Same advice as Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Krishna is giving to Lord Brahma. Again, close to the end of Bhagavad Gita here, it's the second to the last verse in Brahma Samhita. Bhaktisiddhanta summarizes in a very succinct way the gradual process of devotion that begins with faith. Those of you that are taking some of the courses that study the devotional texts, you'll know there's 9 stages of bhakti and they begin with faith, adau shraddha. And when there is some preliminary faith, and Krishna, who is in the heart, he sees there is this faith, he'll then send good association, sadhu sangha, to help kindle that faith, take the little spark and make the little spark into a flame through association. And then gradually, progressively, faith increases and increases up to the maturest stage of love of God. Bhakti can be described, is described by our acharyas in that way. Simply a progression of faith. And it's stated directly in the verse. Proportionate to one's faith, one will have realization. Very natural. So then Bhaktisiddhanta poses 2 questions. Question. If I continue on this track of increasing bhakti, increasing devotion, more and more, how am I going to take care of my worldly responsibilities? That's this, how do I balance between material and spiritual life question. Here's his language. How will the preservation and conduct of worldly affairs be feasible if one is continuously engaged in the endeavor for realization of bhakti? I won't have any time for my worldly affairs. And then, second question, related. What will be the nature of the endeavor for the realization of bhakti when the body will perish consequent to the cessation of the function of the body and of society? How's it going to work if I keep doing bhakti and then the body falls apart, kaput? So how's it? So there's a seeming but not factual conflict or contradiction between advancing spiritually and performing worldly duties. So he answers the question. And he answers the question in the voice of Krishna. The Supreme Lord says, quote, "This world subsists by the constant performance of certain activities. Worldly activities. Fulfill all these activities with meditation of me." Exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Perform your prescribed duties and always think of me. This will destroy the quality that makes those activities appear as acts done by you. What does that mean, acts done by you? It's called false ego. Karta ham iti manyate, in Krishna's language of Bhagavad Gita. During this Brahma Samhita presentation, and multiple sessions, we spoke about the appearance of the element of false ego when Mahatattva starts to manifest into its differentiated elements. The first element that appears is our dear friend, false ego. And then false ego mixing with the modes of nature makes everything else, means it's permeating everything else is false ego. And then Shambhu, who's carrying the glance of Mahavishnu, he is described in the language of Brahma Samhita as the principal, fundamental egoistic principle, something like that. And that he, Shambhu, infuses all living entities, all spirit souls with that principle. So we have this tendency to think of ourselves as creators of our good fortune. But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "Nakar tritmam nakarmani lokasya srijate prabho." Nice verse. He said, "My dear Arjuna, never consider yourself to be the cause of action, nor consider yourself to be the cause of the result of action, nor consider yourself to be inducing others to act," which pretty much covers what our life is made up of. Thinking that we're doing something, causing results, and getting others to do stuff too. Instead, Krishna says, all this is being carried out by my material nature. And behind material nature is guess who? Maya Dyakshina Prakriti. Suryate Satcharacharam is Krishna. By his adhyaksha, by his overseeing, everything is taking place. Material nature is working under his direction. So, that's nice gyan, nice theoretical knowledge. What about the fact that we still think that we're the doer after we've heard it? We think that way. We've got like a really tight false ego program wired into our system. Really difficult to dissolve it. Here is being said, this is the medium of dissolving it. What's that again? Meditating, fixing the mind upon the person for whom we're doing things, Krishna, while we're doing things. This will destroy the quality that makes those activities to appear to be acts done by you. They will then be of the nature of my service, bhakti. So, very nicely, Bhaktisiddhanta elaborates. He says, every embodied soul has a body and mind and social functions that we engage in. And he lists them. These are like, you know, just necessities of life. Things of the body. We eat and sleep and we work and we eat so many things. He gives a long list. And then the mind does some other sets of things. And then we have our social needs. And we just, as long as we're embodied, they're there. So now, is that going to interfere with bhakti? And is bhakti going to interfere with them? That's the question that's been asked. His reply is, when these activities are managed to be performed in the way that is conducive to our endeavor for attainment of bhakti, they are called gauna, or subsidiary. That's a nice word, subsidiary. I mean, business people know what subsidiaries are. It's a subsidiary function. There's primary bhakti. And then there's something that is kind of like not quite that primary bhakti, but it's subsidiary bhakti. Only those activities that are characterized by the principle of pure worship only are called bhakti proper. My meditation is practiced, and every act where bhakti proper is practiced in due time while performing the subsidiary devotional activities in one's intercourse with the ungodly people of this world. You know, like you go to the workplace. Or I go into airplanes. Or somebody goes into the marketplace. Or the kids go to school. You know, there's unwholesome association out there. People that are doing things that are not nice and saying things that are shocking and eating things and drinking things that are, wonder how they, you know, do it. Anyway, this meditation upon the Krishna, the person for whom we do our subsidiary activities. We maintain our families. We go to the office and do our work. We go to the educational institution and we do our studies. We get in an airplane and go to the next place to give another class on Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and the scriptures and guide people in spiritual life. We're doing our worldly duties, our duties for Krishna. Do them for Krishna with meditation upon Krishna, joining them with your devotional practices that help remembrance of Krishna. In fact, that's what we've been doing for these. Now it's going to be like 25 hours worth of discussion, is to bring our mind to Krishna. And together, bring our collective minds to Krishna. With a very practical conclusion, how we can join when the weekend is over, we go back to the things that we do every day, in our day-to-day life, whatever that is, housewife, or employee, or student in the school, or whatever the thing is that we do. We join that activity with our practices of devotion and consider how this can be offered unto Krishna. It's a different mindset than the competitive marketplace kind of mindset. How can I get one over on the other guy so I can get a profit? Or whatever it is that one's activity is involved in. In such a position, a jiva does not become apathetic to Godhead, even by performing those worldly activities. This constitutes the practice of looking inwards, i.e., turning towards one's real self. So, he repeats the same message in different language. Some of you, one of the texts that you study when you do your study of the devotional literature is Ishopanishad, Sri Ishopanishad. And there are copies in the bookstore, and there are classes where it's taught. And this, the first two mantras, Bhaktisiddhanta quotes, Isavashyamidam sarvam yatkincha jagatyam jagat. God-centered life, where one accepts whatever it is that I have. So I have a bead bag, and I have a pair of shoes, and I've got a sweater, and I've got a jacket because it got cold out. So I've got some things that I'm using in Krishna's service. What is being said here is, one should see those things that you have, your home, your car, your bank account, whatever it is that you have that's got your name on it, see it as a gift from the Supreme Lord that can be utilized in service to the Supreme Lord. It may have your name on it, but you're the manager and he's the proprietor. That's, I could elaborate, but I think you have the idea. The title on my car, or the title on your house, or your bank account, or your credit card, or whatever it is, it's got your name on it. But the consciousness is, it's actually Krishna's, the gift from Krishna for me to utilize in his service. So it's got, I've got a little tag on it that says that it's mine, but my consciousness is, it's Krishna's property. I'd like to give some examples, but I'm going to run out of time, so I won't. I'll give one. There's a very nice man who, he's not even a sadhaka, he doesn't chant japa every day, but his heart is devotional. And he has two sons, both are in college, and from his, he met Hare Krishna devotees when he was in college. And so it made a deep impression on him, Dr. Rao. And so from the time he heard what I just said, he started a policy in his house that the way that you answer the phone when people call, you say, Krishna's house. Because he understands, got my name on the title, but it's Krishna's house, which means it's meant for his service. And there's Krishna's altar, and there's Krishna's kitchen, and it's, you know, it's Krishna's paraphernalia, and Krishna's guests come to Krishna's house, so I take care of Krishna's guests because I'm the caretaker of Krishna's house. And his kids answer the phone, Krishna's house, and you know, that's like that, but the family is trained, Krishna's house. So like that. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta is saying. Whatever it is one has, it's a gift awarded to one or provided for one, just like children receive from their parents. You know, here's a coat. It's wintertime. Take this nice coat. And here's a new toothbrush. The one that you have is a little funky, so here's a new toothbrush. And whatever it is that they have, their parents have given them. So if the child can understand, this is something that's given to me very kindly by my mother and father, so that I can conduct my activities nicely. You know, there's a sense of gratitude in their heart. That would be very nice. Sometimes it's not quite like that. But it'd be very nice if it was like that. And that's what he's recommending. So we take away the false ego thing, it's mine, and it's Krishna is to be used in service to Krishna. That's all. And then we're not entangled in the false ego program of I and mine. But we're simply engaged in service to Krishna. So, Brahma's particular material involvement is creating a universe. So, he's now speaking, you know, writing as if Krishna is speaking. You should do your duties of the world by meditation of worshipping Godhead thereby. In other words, offering that activity that you're doing to him, to Krishna. You know, yad karoshi, yad asnasi, yad jahosi, dadasi, yad, that verse of Bhagavad Gita. If that creative desire, you want to create a universe. If that creative desire is practiced by conjoining the same with the meditation of obeying therein the command of the Supreme Lord, then it will be a subsidiary function, Gonadharma, being helpful for the growth of the disposition of the service of the divinity or God by reason of its characteristic of seeking the protection of Godhead. So this is a paraphrase of a verse from Padma Purana that indicates a symptom of surrender. There's six angas or limbs or symptoms of surrender. One of them being, God is my protector. I do things, but it's not the lock on my door and the security alarm system in my car and whatever all those things. That's my protection. I may do those things, but ultimately God is my protector. And protecting me from illusion comes from seeking shelter of the personality of Godhead. And that way one can involve oneself in activities of the world, and it's not in conflict with bhakti, and bhakti is not in conflict with it. And then the last verse. Yeah, you can say so much about that, but no, we're running out of time. This is the very last verse of Sri Brahma Samhita. Let's recite it together. Aham hi vishvashacharacharasya bijam pradhanam prapati pupanscha mayahitam teja idam vivarshi vidhe vidhe hi tvam ato jaganti. Translation. Listen, O Vidhi, I am the seed, the fundamental principle of this world of animate and inanimate objects. I am Pradhan. I am Prakriti. I am Purusha. This fiery energy that belongs specially to the Brahman that inheres in you has also been conferred by me. It is by bearing this fiery energy that you regulate this phenomenal world of animate and inanimate objects. Again, this is Krishna speaking to Lord Brahma. And when this book, 62-verse book, Sri Brahma Samhita, was discovered at the Adi Keshava temple in South India, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, as a sannyasi, traveling through the various holy places in South India. When he read this book, this is now the first day, the introduction day, he began dancing ecstatically, exuberantly, because it spoke so clearly and concisely the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and the very same teachings that he was giving, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving. And this particular point, the Chintya Veda Veda Tattva, I'll take 2 or 3 minutes to explain that. Girls? What is the relationship between things of this world and God? Or, what is the relationship between matter and spirit and God? Because this world is made up of the combination of matter and spirit. There's souls. There's one of them. Who are embodied in matter. And because the soul is animating matter, matter moves. So this world is a combination of matter and spirit. What's the relationship between matter and spirit with the source of emanation? Well, there's some teachings, there's different teachings. So we'll go through what some of them say. Lord Chaitanya's teaching is, there's a relationship of simultaneous oneness because the energy doesn't exist independently of the energetic. So there's an inseparable oneness of energy and energetic. Spiritual energy and material energy are inseparable from the source of emanation. At the same time, there's a difference. One is energy, the other is energetic. We can't say the energy is energetic. The energy is energy from the energetic. So there's a distinction. So his teaching is not only things of this world, but everything that exists. Things you can't even think of that exist. There's a relationship of oneness and difference of all things with Krishna. Very important. On that basis, we can use all things in Krishna's service. We can use worldly things in Krishna's service because those worldly things have a relationship with Krishna. It's just a matter of restoring those things to their source, to Krishna. This is a favorite dancing avenue, the central aisle. Anyway, what to do? So because, let's say, where are they? There's these little hand symbols. It's brass and then some piece of cotton sticking out of the brass. So there's a relationship between these elements and Krishna. Krishna's the source. I can use them in service to Krishna. I can use them in service to Krishna. And, you know, cell phones. And, you know, just whatever you want to think of. Because there's some existential relationship between these things and their source of emanation, there is some way to use these things. The microphone, Prabhupada would use that example. It's just matter. You know, plastic and metal and whatever else is the elements that are involved in the thing. But because it's used in Krishna's service, when it's used in Krishna's service, it can act in a spiritual way. Or, you know, the altar. Or, you know, Krishna's temple. Or the articles that are used in worship. There's a term for it, chadiya, paraphernalia that's used in Krishna's service. It's worshipable because the connection with Krishna is established by regularly using those articles in Krishna's service. It's sanctifying just to come in contact. And prasadam. And when we're done with the evening program, we'll all go take prasadam. It's what's been offered to Krishna. And because it's been offered to Krishna, it's not just vegetarian food. It's mercy, it's remnants of what's been offered to Krishna now being accepted by us. It's sanctifying our very existence according to the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. And so what justifies taking those items and offering them to Krishna? Because there's a relationship with Krishna. And we're just acknowledging that by devotional consciousness. And so the philosophy is achintya, means inconceivable. Veda, aveda. Difference, non-difference. Tattva is the teaching of everything that exists has its inconceivable simultaneous oneness and difference. And that's for our binary processor, the mind. It's either a one or a zero. It's either the same as or different from. So the achintya part is simultaneously same as and different from. So binary processors shake their head and say no. Therefore that's achintya. It's not to be conceived within the mind, the binary processor mind, but it's something that's a spiritual reality. And through that spiritual reality, or tattva, one can engage things of this world in devotional service, and they can act in a spiritual way. The microphone can act in a spiritual way. The cartels can act in a spiritual way. The paraphernalia of the deities can act in a spiritual way, and so forth. And you can make your home sanctified and spiritualized in the same manner. Recognize that it's Krishna's, and engage in making spiritual vibrations, like have kirtan in your home, and recite Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, discuss it with others, and invite friends to come and take prasadam in your home. Sanctify your home, and it'll act in a spiritualizing way for your own consciousness and upliftment. And that's the conclusion of Sri Brahma Samhita. It's the teaching that Krishna is giving to Brahma, how to join your material activity or worldly involvements, the various duties of life, with the practices of sadhana, and with practices of sadhana, remembrance of Krishna. Now, I don't know if we have time for questions, because I told the bell rings at 7:30.
I completely did a silent arti tomorrow.
Huh?
They did silent arti.
Silent arti. That's novel. Okay. So any comments or questions from anybody? And whatever you'd like to ask about. And if there aren't any, we'll have arti. And those are Pujari. Okay. So, if Krishna allows us to live one more year, I'll see you again next year. And we'll discuss the Govindam prayers. As I shared with some of the kids today, I'm already looking forward to just that meditation of the meaning of the Govinda prayers and finding nice images, paintings of Krishna and pictures of things that will help illustrate. I like looking forward to just even preparing what to speak of, being with all of you next Thanksgiving holiday, Krishna permitting, to discuss the Govinda prayers. Do you have a question? Here comes the microphone.
Maharaj, so do the Govinda prayers in the rest of chapter 5, can you sing them as one, or are they different?
What was the punchline of the question? I didn't get it. We'll just say the last part, not the whole thing.
So can you sing the Govinda prayers?
Can I sing?
No, can you join the Govinda prayers?
With the rest of the verses,
or no?
Sure, because they're right in the middle. What we've been discussing is verse 1 through 28, and then the Govinda prayers are 29 through 56, and then we discuss 57 through 62. So certainly you can join them. They're already joined. In fact, where we ended up with verse 28, Brahma is ready to go to sing the Govinda prayers because he's been enlightened by the conclusive truths of all the Vedas. And with that enlightenment, he then expresses them in these wonderful prayers or stotras. Okay? Okay, thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada.